For the past year, KBIA has been working on this story about a place in northeast Missouri called Heartland. It's a story with threads of religion, law, business, and morality that all end in a knot in the middle of a cornfield. It's a complex story, so we produced a half-hour feature brought to you now by reporter Abigail Keel. Stay with us.
If you drive about 85 miles northeast of Columbia, 45 minutes from the nearest big small town, along a two-lane highway amidst cornfields and soybeans, you'll crest a hill and you'll see it. First, you'll see the water tower. It's bright white, a beacon to farms around, and it's topped with an emblematic cross. Below it, you'll see the new houses and roads, maybe some cows in the distance. It looks like a modern suburb dropped in the middle of a cornfield. It's not a city exactly, it's just heartland. And depending on who you talk to, this place is either a refuge or an open wound.
Bottoms, a lot of people think they're to set on. They're to spank.
You know, besides a stable environment, I don't even know what Heartland would have to offer besides Jesus. I mean, he is the answer to all things. And
no, it's chocolate. You say that whatever they touch is chocolate.
But all of those problems would be solved if we just knew God.
But before we get to all of that, let's go to Heartland. Heartland is an intentional Christian community designed after Psalm 107, where God leads the broken to a city of holiness. Pastor Charlie, or Charles Sharp, founded Ozark National Life Insurance Company in Kansas City, Missouri in 1964. He's made millions of dollars since then and remains president of the company at 87 years old. In 1995, he started Heartland Community Church, according to Heartland legend, after a vision from God. But when God's plan for your community involves a cornfield, you start needing things like food, houses, and eventually a lot more. So Sharp started building. Brenda Potts is an official tour guide for Heartland. She took a team of KBIA reporters around the complex that spreads into three counties in June 2013.
Everything that you see, these houses are built and designed by our own construction.
On the tour, Potts pointed out everything at Heartland, from the general store to the laundromat called Cleansing Waters. There was an auto body shop, the zoo, the medical center, and the public restaurant and lodge. There was also an airport. Not to mention the mansion, backing up to the beautiful pond, all belonging to Charles and Lori Sharp. One stop was the creamery and cheese packaging plant. Maybe that finally rings a bell. For many in the state, the only thing they know about this place is the cheese. Heartland operates a dairy that sells milk, eggs, and cheese. Stores like Hy-Vee and Schnucks carry Heartland's brand. They have silver trucks that say Jesus is the answer and travel highways like 63, I-70, and I-44. But the point of Heartland isn't the businesses. The real point of Heartland goes a lot deeper.
We're a working dairy and a
This is a pastor talking in a promotional video produced by Heartland.
But all that is secondary. You know, I can't change your life. I can't, Heartland can't save you, but Jesus Christ can.
Heartlanders, as they call themselves, say people come for a relationship with Jesus. During our tour, many people told us that Heartland had changed their lives, even saved them. Some people hear about Heartland through their churches. Many are referred by friends who already live there or know Sharp through his companies. Once you find your way to Heartland, there's little reason to leave. Living expenses are automatically docked from pay, so employees don't pay out of pocket for housing. Many of them are young and start their adult lives with the support of Heartland. A lot of important people know about Heartland, too. Peter Kinder, Missouri's lieutenant governor, tweeted in 2012 about his visit to Heartland. John Ashcroft, the former governor of Missouri and former U.S. Attorney General, spoke at the Heartland Christian College fundraiser in 2013, broadcast on KWIX Radio.
Delighted to be back in northeast Missouri. Great to be with you.
He also wrote the foreword to Charles Sharp's autobiography, as they are longtime friends. So even though it's nestled in a very rural area in northeast Missouri, Heartland isn't a secret. In fact, people find Heartland from all over the United States, and then they send their children there. Heartland Christian Academy is a private school that opened on the complex in 1996. It's a K-12 curriculum that currently has more than 200 students. Some students live at Heartland with their families. Some come daily from nearby small towns. Others are boarders, dropped off by their parents for the youth program, a rehabilitation track for wayward teens. Here's what Heartland's website says about the Academy. If you desire a school for your children where God is honored, the Bible is revered as a standard for life, and excellence is pursued, consider Heartland Christian Academy. And plenty of people agree.
I would say stability.
As a teen, Sarah Barton says she was pretty out of control. She ran away, skipped school, slept in parks. But Heartland, she said, saved her.
I don't even know, you know, besides a stable environment, I don't even know what Heartland would have to offer besides Jesus.
Barton is not alone. We spoke with other former students at Heartland who said they felt the stability and structure put them on the right path. But while the strictness works for some, others say it crosses a line. Heartland Christian Academy openly uses corporal punishment. In Missouri, it's legal for schools to use physical punishment as long as parents know the school's policy. And Heartland doesn't hide its philosophy. You can find it in the online application. Besides, it's in Proverbs. Whoever spares the rod hates their children. We spoke to many people at Heartland who were proud former students. But we spoke to some people who no longer live at Heartland who are not as fond of their policies.
Hi.
That's Leah DeVoe Scribner. We spoke to her via Skype from Alaska, where she now lives with her husband and children. She was a student at Heartland between 2003 and 2005. She said her parents sent her there to gain a closer relationship with God.
I know people wouldn't say most people wouldn't say corporal punishment or swatting is abuse, but when you're getting, I mean, we would get swats from, you know, men in their 30s. One guy, he used to be like an ex-Marine, and, you know, being a 14-year-old little girl getting swats from them, and they used the big paddles with, they had holes in them, so when they would swat you, it would leave welts. It's hard to talk about just because they would do it for, you know, nothing at all. I shaved my armpits once. That was the first time I got swat.
Just say if you had a chore, like to wash the table, and you didn't do it correctly, you would get some form of consequence. And it could be consisting of writing scripture. They believe in giving swats.
Maya Swanson was adopted from Bulgaria and moved to Wisconsin. She said her parents had trouble with the transition and sent her to Heartland with her brothers in 2001 when she was 9 years old. She lived there for 7 years.
Because the limit was 10 swats. You couldn't go over than 10 swats.
And I know people, girls, that they would get the 10 swats for a week straight just for one thing that they did wrong.
And I don't exactly what I did wrong, but I received 15 swats. I think within 10 minutes, they went too far. I don't want to be graphic, but basically I was in the hospital for 2 weeks.
It hit me so hard that I fell forward and moved my shoulder weird, and it dislocated, popped right out of place. And for the next few days, I can't remember how many exactly, my whole arm, it was just so much pain, and it was swollen and just like, I mean, it was turning blue.
Both DeVoe Scribner and Swanson say they sought medical treatment for their injuries. It's not just physical. Heartland openly uses a variety of techniques to keep children in line.
If they did something really bad, they would obviously put the girls in an orange suit or an ugly dress with a sign that said talk out, and that's a way to really humiliate somebody.
Orange suits are prison-style jumpsuits that students must wear when they've broken a rule. Staff says it helps them spot children attempting to run away after getting in trouble. When a student wears the talk out sign, they aren't allowed to speak unless directed to by staff.
It's not, just can't talk within, like, you know, within an hour. I've seen girls, they couldn't talk for months.
The Missouri Department of Social Services mentions isolation, starvation, and untrained staff as situations that could cross the boundary into abuse or neglect. Swanson and DeVoe Scribner say that while they were there, students were isolated, denied meals, and verbally abused. Heartland monitors student phone calls and mail. They can't have cell phones.
I had friends that just couldn't handle it, and like they would run through the cornfields to try to get out, and I mean, I would just remember them coming back and just be completely like scraped up. They wanted to get out so bad that they would go through that much trouble.
To understand Heartland's policies, you need to hear from someone in charge. And who better than the founder himself? Charles Sharp's office was one of the last stops on our tour.
Bottoms, a lot of people think they're to set on. They're to spank. And you know, it works just fine.
Sharp told us many times in our interview that he didn't think Heartland's corporal punishment policies crossed the line.
We look at all models. We've looked at everything. But there is no model works like spanking. It's not the way. It's a way. Spanking is the last resort. But when it comes down to that, if you can't get a kid to do what you tell them, I want to ask you a question. What would you do? And, of course, through the years, I've taken swats myself for, I've done it several times, and make them watch. They have to watch. Now, that usually is as hard on them or harder on them than when you give them swats. Yeah, we've never broke. I think we did one time have a kid break his arm or something.
Even though some people we spoke to said they felt isolated from resources and help, Sharp says Heartland has an ombudsman.
We have no abuse here. There is none. We have no zero tolerance.
Sharp ran his insurance company for 40 years before he found his calling, to start Heartland. He tells a story that everyone at Heartland knows about driving along a country road and hearing the voice of God. There's a mural of it in the school, with a yellow glow radiating from Sharp's face as he pictures what Heartland looks like today.
Driving down the road, and the Lord said to me, now you can hear me. It's me, I'm talking to you, I want you to build a place for kids.
Sharp's mission at Heartland is to provide the kind of instruction that he believes will put youth on the right path, and to combat the problems he sees with how society deals with children.
Why do you think our juvenile home places are packed? The kids are wonderful. There's nothing wrong with our kids. They just don't have anybody to raise them. But all of those problems would be solved if we just knew God.
And that doesn't just go for his school. Another pride of Heartland is the Men's Recovery Program, a private religious program that helps rehabilitate over 100 men at a time who have issues ranging from alcohol and drug addiction to serious crimes and jail time.
Nobody will hire a person because they've been in prison. Well, those are the very people we want. Because once we rehabilitate them, they really make great citizens.
Most of the guys in the recovery program work for Heartland's huge cattle and dairy operations as part of their treatment. The program is 18 months long, longer than many rehab options, and the men live and work about 10 miles away from the main campus, even further off the beaten path. For many guys that come to Heartland, they get exactly what they feel they need.
Well, number one is God. God, you know, it's a faith-based program. Number two, it makes you live a year and a half sober.
That's Eric Wilson. He had been at Heartland for 3 years when we talked to him in June 2013. Wilson struggled with drugs for years before he tried any sort of rehab. He says pain pills, meth, and alcohol were all part of his self-medication regimen. It put strain on his family. After trying a few more standard rehabilitation centers and relapsing, Wilson says he hit a low point.
I did try to kill myself after the second rehab. I took an 8-inch buck knife and I slit my throat, put 200 stitches in my throat. It was pretty much the lowest point, because it was the most hopeless point, I think. And that's a pretty low point to be at.
Wilson is now one of Heartland's successful testimonies. He stuck around Heartland after the program for the job security and was later joined by his family. His story isn't uncommon around Heartland. Some of the guys who graduate from recovery move back to the main Heartland complex and find jobs there or remain in the dairy. But some move into supervisory roles in the program, where they become responsible for leading others through recovery. Many of the men in the program have committed serious crimes, sometimes as serious as sex offenses, and then they stick around Heartland and the vulnerable population it serves. But Sharp and those who run the program say that growing to the point of being able to help others shows real change of character.
They are in charge, and we trust them. We know what they're going to do tomorrow. Now, we're let down occasionally, but how many times have you been let down by people that's never been in prison?
Sharp says Heartland does undeniable good in changing people's lives. Why else would he invest the $140 million he has in starting and maintaining Heartland? Frankly, he says, look around. What the state is doing to help troubled youth and people who need rehabilitation isn't working. And those who say he's running some sort of scam with his program baffle Sharp.
I don't care what the people say. It doesn't mean a thing to me. It's all my money anyway. People were determined that we had some kind of an ulterior motive. This is what I never could figure out. Now, if you can show me anybody that's made millions and millions of dollars messing with kids, I want you to show them to me.
And he's not being paranoid. There was a period of time when he and Heartland were getting a lot of attention from the state. In the late 1990s, there were a number of environmental lawsuits handled by then-Attorney General Jay Nixon's office, which in one case cost Sharp's company $110,000. And then there was a state raid in 2001.
The state wanted to take the place over, and they just hated it because they don't have any success. And we have a lot of success. If we hadn't had money, they would have got it done.
In 2001, criminal charges were filed against five adults at Heartland for what court documents described as the manure pit incident. Students were being made to shovel and, by some accounts, stand in cow manure as punishment. A jury in Northeast Missouri acquitted three staff members, saying the punishment seemed more like farm work and less like abuse. Charges were dropped against the other two. But as rumors of abuse grew, so did concern from the state. Maya Swanson from earlier was one of the students removed from Heartland by the state in the raid and later returned.
October 30th is when the juvenile officers, I don't know how many, but there was just way too many that came unexpectedly and went in and took 115 students out. It was, for me, it was very, I mean, I was 9 years old. It was very chaotic.
Heartland has a telecommunications company, and staff were videotaping during the raid. In the video, you can see state officers escorting children out of the school and loading them onto school buses. Students are yelling and resisting, and staff members seem helpless. The officers are focused on evacuating the school. All of this happened on October 30th, 2001. The state removed 115 students from Heartland Christian Academy after an investigation into the child abuse claims from a hotline call. In the end, all but three students ended up back at Heartland because their parents returned them. After all, children become custody of the state in a raid, and legally, their parents still had custody. Heartland wasn't pleased, and Sharp began a legal battle that lasted more than 3 years, which he said cost him $6 million to win. Basically, parents and Sharp filed numerous lawsuits, making the case that the state acted rashly and harmfully by removing students from Heartland. They sued the state, departments involved in the raid, and even some individuals working on behalf of the Youth Services Department. These individuals were juvenile officers, special agents who work with young people involved in legal issues with the state. Their role is somewhere between the legislative and executive branches. Missouri is one of few states with these positions. In the Heartland case, it was the juvenile officers, specifically one man named Mike Waddle, who were in charge of making the call. Waddle and a team of other juvenile officers had conducted interviews with students at Heartland before the raid, but they say as the investigation got serious, they thought conversations with Heartland were strained. They felt there was evidence of child abuse worthy of action and thought a raid was their best option. Heartland did not. Clark Peters is an assistant professor at the University of Missouri School of Social Work. He says it's tough to walk the fine line between constraining authority and allowing discretion for juvenile officers.
This is not easy work, and the juvenile officer has to make very difficult decisions, and often the best decision is simply the least bad among bad choices.
Heartland also sued Mike Waddle in civil court over the raid. He represented himself. There were appeals, but eventually Heartland won $800,000 in legal fees. Judge E. Richard Weber signed an injunction barring the state from removing any child from Heartland without having solid proof the child is being abused or is in imminent danger of abuse. This ruling essentially set a very high bar for the state to meet if it wants to get involved at Heartland.
This is the kind of work that
you kind of hope people are passionate about. I don't know how you can be dispassionate about caring for children.
Despite his passion, Waddle, one of the juvenile officers Peters is talking about, did not want to go on the record for this story because he says thinking about the case takes too much out of him. He no longer works for the Youth Services Department. And not only that, he says he lost his faith in a system he defended, Missouri's juvenile justice system. Waddle says the personal toll of discussing it brings up things it's taken him 10 years to try and forget. Think back to that moment when Charles Sharp got his vision from God to start this place in a cornfield, spread out over three counties in northeastern Missouri. Regardless of how you feel about that story, there's something behind the idea that this cornfield in Missouri is the perfect place for Heartland to exist. Many of our sources say Missouri is likely one of the only places in the country where Heartland could operate. Missouri requires most child care facilities, residential care facilities, and schools to be at minimum inspected for health and safety. This means there are minimum requirements facilities must meet, and they can exceed them if they choose to become licensed or accredited by the state. Any facility that receives public funding must meet those requirements. None of this applies to Heartland.
There is an exemption granted for religiously oriented programs. And the thinking there is that the state should not interfere with something that's religious-based.
Candy Iveson is a faculty member at the School of Social Work at the University of Missouri. And those private facilities Iveson is talking about can claim a religious exemption from inspection and licensing. All they even have to do is claim it.
If you believe that you have this faith exemption as a facility, that's good enough. You don't have to apply to verify that that's the case.
This is Matt Frank, the deputy metro editor for the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. He wrote a series of articles on teen reform ministries in Missouri in the early 2000s. Missouri has a combination of laws that is distinct. Corporal punishment in schools is only legal in 19 states, including Missouri. Private and religious schools don't have to submit their curriculum for approval. And while multiple states have some religious exemptions to licensure for residential facilities, Missouri's regulations are some of the most lax in the nation, according to our sources.
Missouri has long attracted teen reform ministries of this sort because they're fully unregulated due to the faith exemption. It's been my experience that when there is a problem at any kind of institution, that it's typically your worst employee that causes you problems.
Frank says the lack of regulations makes this problem worse. It's not just that there's no regulatory body to check on employees who aren't meeting standards. There aren't even any standards. But Candy Iveson says it's important to keep in mind just how complicated it is to write and change child welfare laws. They're tangled up in something very important, especially for Missourians, religious freedom. And at its core, religious freedom is a form of individual rights. This same idea comes back into play when we talk about child welfare. Some people promote the rights of parents to make decisions for their families, and others think there can be good reason to allow state intrusion into family affairs.
It's a fundamental values conflict for us. This is the state intruding in the family that we consider most sacrosanct. It is a policy area that is very nuanced and difficult.
The last time Missouri's lawmakers took on the task of reforming child welfare laws was 2004. Catherine Hanaway, who was Speaker of the State House at the time, sponsored the Dominic James Bill. It was named after a young boy who died at the hands of his foster father and prompted the overhaul of all sorts of child and foster care reform issues. It made a lot of other significant changes, but one of the most important for this story is that it changed the standard of proof for child abuse cases, making it more difficult to prove abuse or neglect. And it didn't change the licensing laws that apply to places like Heartland. Hanaway's political ascent continued from there. She was later appointed by John Ashcroft to the U.S. Attorney General's office, and she's planning to run for governor in 2016. Another one of many political forces behind the bill was someone we already know.
Well, if I find a guy that I think has got is a conservative person that doesn't want to give away the country, and he stands for a marriage as a man and a woman, I'll vote for him.
While Charles Sharp is very critical of the state and refuses to take any money from the state for Heartland's benefit, he's very interested in state politics. He has his own lobbyist, and he's proud of helping John Ashcroft make it to Washington, D.C. Matt Frank explained it like this.
Well, Charlie Sharp has always been a key political donor. And yeah, I'd consider him one of the more influential people in Jefferson City circles.
According to data from the Missouri Ethics Commission, Sharp, his wife Lori, their business associates, and their corporations have donated just less than $1 million to political candidates and organizations since 2002. So when the Dominic James case prompted Hanaway's bill, Sharp and his lobbyists had a seat at the table. A 2003 editorial by the St. Louis Post-Dispatch said that the Dominic James bill should actually have been called the Heartland Protection Act. At one point, a provision was inserted in the bill that would have made it impossible for the state to consider something abuse at an unlicensed facility like Heartland as long as it was part of the institution's policy. This means that the only rules unlicensed facilities like Heartland would have to listen to were the rules they made up for themselves. The provision was eventually taken out. Frank says the raid and the expensive legal aftermath have certainly had an influence over Missouri's lawmakers, making them less likely to want to get involved at private facilities. Frank says the way he sees it, there could be some sort of compromise reached on minimal regulations, just to have a record of these facilities existing and protecting their clients from bad-intentioned employees.
I guess I would like to see a conversation about comparing how Missouri compares to other states and looking at the track record of these facilities.
But Frank acknowledges protecting religious freedom is sort of in Missouri's political bones. So it's unlikely there will be a push to change the laws that affect Heartland anytime soon. Frank says while he was reporting about Heartland and some of these types of facilities, he also saw the need that helps them exist. He's met some desperate parents who oftentimes aren't even religious, but are just at the end of their rope.
Who's to say whether it works? I mean, I've spoken to enough people who, as adults, say that it worked for them. There's certainly a lot of parents who will swear that it was the saving grace of their children.
But some former students, like Leah DeVos-Gribner, say that even though Sharp and others at Heartland may have had good intentions, they've left invisible scars.
I would just say that he doesn't know the damage that he's done.
Even Sharp recognizes his program isn't ideal for everyone.
Well, I'm sure there's kids that don't think they had a great experience because they didn't want to change. This is right close to hell, about as close as you can get. Because we want them to know what hell's going to be like when they get there. So we try to say, you know what? If you don't want to change, you don't want to come here.
There are people who told us that their experience at Heartland was close to hell. But plenty of others we spoke to saw Heartland as a paradise or a refuge. A place that took them when nowhere else would. But the truth is, Heartland is neither heaven nor hell. It's a place that can help, and it can inflict lasting wounds. I'm Abigail Kuehl. Special thanks to Ryan Famuliner, Janet Saidi, and Casey Morrell for their reporting work on this story with KBIA. Music from Paddington Bear and Uncle Woody Sullender and Seamus Cater.
There's still more to this story about Heartland. Visit KBIA.org, where we have photos of the Heartland campus, more details about the place, and a spot for you to share your thoughts about this story.
In the original broadcast of this story, we used a soundbite where Maya Swanson said she was in the hospital for 2 weeks after being swatted at Heartland. She later clarified to us that she was not admitted to the hospital for any length of time, but rather seen by a doctor at Heartland and at the hospital in Wisconsin where she returned. This version of the story reflects these changes.